Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning, if you've just tuned in. As it relates to a story that was on the front of the Irish Farmers Journal, a caller randomly, but important to them, points out that they believe the live export of wee calves is cruel, it should be banned. And I think really generally, I think particularly, you know, meat eaters, I think vegetarians or those that don't eat meat would be more aware of it. But I think meat eaters kind of try and block that kind of stuff out, you know, how a steak or a lamb chop or a chicken breast might end up in the fridge. Whereas maybe someone who doesn't eat meat might be more in tune with that, because there's not really any humane way, is there, to you know, raise meat specifically to kill it and then consume it. But as I say, I think different people have different views. Re-dentists, a caller says, and I'm not sure about this, by law, if you're in pain, the dentist has to sort you out. Any dentist must do this full stop. As I say, I'm not familiar with that at all. Why would they be compelled to do so? I mean, a GP is not even compelled to do that. Why a dentist? Tell your listener with toothache to get clove oil in the natural way, Letterkenny, and dab it on his gum with the finger. It'll numb the gum. Just apply liberally as much as is needed. Thanks, Christina, for that. And that probably will get them through until such time as they get the work done. So grab yourself some clove oil. Did I say olive? Clove oil in the natural way, Letterkenny or elsewhere. Dab it on the gum with your finger and it'll numb the gum, but apply it liberally. In terms of tourism, hi Greg, Donegal gets the least tourists in the country. I understand the point of housing, but surely more tourists would benefit the county. But I suppose, is it about the makeup of the tourists? What kind of tourists are we talking about? I think a lot of the houses aren't necessarily Airbnb. They're people from the north or down the country who have them, but I don't know the breakdown of them. Staying with the issues of houses, if people can't get homes because all the houses are Airbnb, then Airbnb needs regulated, even if it hits your paycheck. People in this county are desperately struggling. 60% of my wages go to rent because the market is so skewed due to the lack of availability, and that's because all the availability is in Airbnb. 20 houses to rent in all of Donegal on daft.ie, over 1,000 up on Airbnb. It is a joke. That's badly skewed, isn't it? So 1,000 short-term lets. Now, I wonder, some of those might be little cabins and stuff, right? But even if it were half that, 28 houses to rent in the county, 1,000 available for Airbnb. And I wonder if some of them are probably delisted for the winter. Staying on that topic, actually moving on to water. Good morning. I'm wondering if you could find out when our water will be restored. We were told on Tuesday night that it would be restored on Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. Then we were told it would be 8:15 last night. And now this morning, we still have none. Apparently, there's no outage in our area that it was restored last night. Thanks. Now, you're going to have to tell me where you are because I don't know where you're talking of. We do have 3 or 4 outages, it seems, daily. So let me know. We'll try and find out more for you. In terms of the presidential campaign, so only a week into the race for the big house in Phoenix Park, and already cute tourism has raised its ugly head, with Fianna Fáil's candidate Jim Gavin flouting the airspace regulation and unsanctioned promo videos claiming support from his pals in the Defence Forces. Like I've always said, the Irish get the leaders they deserve. Feckless. Now, I understand your take, but this is just oversight stuff, I think. And if this is the worst of the controversies, I think the candidates will be all right. You know, flying a drone in a space where it's not supposed to be flown, if you saw the drone footage, it's barely even a slap on the wrist. And I think it was ignorance that the army, personally, some members of it, backed Gavin, or he used the videos to his advantage, and then the army had to come in and say, no, we're above politics, you can't do that. Again, is that the level of controversy we're dealing with? We also had a comment about schools not letting kids in early, especially on very wet mornings. The excuse for schools, I can't speak today, there's a few reasons for that, but anyway, the excuse for schools not opening is that children aren't officially insured until 9:20. This is what I suspected. They go on to say that if the children are not insured before 9:20, how can children be allowed into the school? How are children made to stand outside for long periods of time? It's even worse when there's bad weather. The weather is supposed to be worse tomorrow. If the children aren't let in, I will march the children in myself. There's a mum or dad not standing for any more. They've had enough. And just a request as we try and get to them around about this time. Please play a request for Paddy and Petra, who got married yesterday in Donegal Town, wishing you all the best from your mother. And best wishes from all the Glasgow gang. And they've put a couple of requests in there. We don't play music, but we can pass them on to later presenters. The words are the musical notes to their ears, I am sure. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And I'm joined in the studio today by Dr. Marie Hainsworth, CEO of Donegal Domestic Violence Services. Thanks so much, Marie, for joining us.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks.
Always lovely to see you. And Jessica Gallagher, Director of the Four Empowerment Programme. Hi, Jessica.
Hello, Greg.
Great to have you in. I don't think you've been in with us before.
I have not.
Okay, it's great to have you with us. Now, Donegal Domestic Violence Services were recently honoured at the Global Good Awards with a Bronze Award for the newest programme, For Empowerment. Do you want to sort of outline the history of the programme, Marie?
Yeah, well, this is, as you know, we're a domestic violence service and we've always worked with clients along the lines of providing accommodation and providing outreach. But over the last number of years, we've looked a little bit more at many of our more complex client needs, you know, and we've looked at maybe different types of supports that we need. And one of the things we recognised was that really what people want is a sense of connection and community. Like if we were going to move people on out of an abusive relationship, they need to have a support network that's not going to be tying them back into that relationship. And this was becoming a bit of a hurdle for a lot of our clients. So Jessica will go into more detail, but basically when Jessica came on board, she met up with the Sports Partnership, who were looking at providing sports programs for clients from disadvantaged backgrounds. And not that all of our clients are disadvantaged, but, you know, our target group met that requirement. So that became a partnership between the two organisations. And actually, it was earlier on this year that, in fact, Jessica can tell you a little bit more about that, that we actually won a national sports award for the community partnership between DDVS and the Sports Partnership. And then since then, we then expanded the programme. So it wasn't just sport and activities, but we also went into partnership and included Donegal Local Development Company. So they had a bit more of a focus. A lot of this funding is European funding. So it has a criteria of leading off into employment, social development, you know, sustainability within the community. So DLDC were particularly keen to go and move clients on in terms of employment opportunities. And it just enabled us to offer more workshops around self.
But these are, generally speaking, victims of domestic violence.
They're all victims of domestic abuse because they're all our clients.
Yeah. Yes, yet... you know, they benefit beyond that. In other words, if there are other gaps, say, in education or, you know, generally speaking, on getting into employment, you know, whilst, of course, you're supporting them with domestic violence, this is broader support, isn't it?
Well, at some level, except domestic violence is probably broader than people imagine. But domestic violence is, it's not just physical violence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also financial abuse. It's also, and often the way that the abuse works in a relationship is that the person will be stopped from enhancing their own education. They'll be stopped going to college. They won't be given any access to funding in their own right. They won't be able to manage. So a lot of the skills around managing your own life, a lot of things that we take for granted every day, being able to go out, have a cup of coffee with your friends and all of that, that hasn't been allowed to happen. Mm. So no support networks have been built up.
Well,
no
confidence
friendship
has
groups.
Been broken down.
Yeah. Mm. And when people leave an abusive relationship, they actually feel very much that they can't survive on their own. And that's one of the factors that kind of drives people back into abusive relationships.
And in a way, that's a continuance of the abuse even when left the space.
So even though you physically left the relationship, you're still being controlled by the abuser, and especially if children were involved, because you've still got to have ongoing contact at some level. So what we were finding was clients were not able to really leave the relationship completely. They needed some additional supports, and that's where this program kind of came in.
And that's where Jessica Gallagher came in. And Jessica, I presume elements of this are employed in this space or other support spaces as well. But how this is put together and employed is, it's groundbreaking. It is trailblazing to some extent.
It is. We are trying to create a new model of working with people who have experienced trauma. So we are engaging them in all different aspects of their own community so that they have the confidence to get back out there and engage. They're learning how to parent their children again. They're learning to create those bonds. And they're really just putting themselves out there in a safe space. And then we give them the steps and the tools to continue engaging in those things and use that momentum.
And have you been, how many people have you been able to work with so far? Is this because it's so multidisciplinary that it's a small number of people, or can it be broadened out for larger numbers?
So we started off the program about a year and a half ago, and we started with 8 participants, and currently we are at 80 plus.
Wow.
Plus, I would say, about 50 plus children. So we are broadening it as we speak. I think it can also be applied to other demographics, so that's something else that we're looking at. We have a high high number of addictions and mental health in addition to the domestic violence. So we're looking at kind of all those comorbid diagnoses and things like that. We also have a high number of adults and children with autism and additional needs. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at the impacts of trauma on those additional needs and those behavioral concerns and things like that as well.
How have you seen the people you've worked with progress? Because just to talk of some of the offering, the physical activity, social connection, confidence workshops, capacity building, CV workshops, helping people get indoor secondary education, continuing their education, job placements, all really, really brilliant life tools, right? So, you know, of the 80, I mean, some are through it, some aren't, right? What are you witnessing in terms of the changes it's making to the people you're working with?
I think the biggest impact is on their own confidence. Mm. You know, everybody is, they are accessing different parts of the community and different things that they want. So we've had, I would say maybe 20% have gone on for continuing education. We've had SNA completion courses. We've had people get their nail tech certification, makeup courses, all types of different things. And it's really client led. So whatever the clients are saying that they want to get involved with, that's what we are looking to kind of facilitate. So if somebody says to me they really, really want to try, you know, taking a TEFL course, I help them connect with that through the DLDC. If somebody wants to try equine therapy, myself and the sports partnership, we put that together and we make that happen. So all of the offerings and all of the things that we're doing are all designed by the client as well. Mm. So it's really empowering them to use their voices and to get back out there and feel heard for the first time in a long time.
You've met with an awful lot of people and this costs money, right? Is there long-term funding in place? This is not pilot project, or what's the situation in terms of its funding going forward? What do you, Marie? I don't want to be negative or anything, but it sounds great. Is this something that's going to be in place for the foreseeable future?
Well, we're hoping so, because one of the steps is that we've got a number of different supports, you know, in terms of different agencies. So we are getting European funding at the moment and linking in. The next step, I think, is, you know, because DLDC are quite supportive of social enterprises, is to set this up as its own social enterprise project, which would be one source of revenue. And then the other sort then is that as its own independent entity, it can then access support in its own right. This is one of the reasons we kind of put the project forward to be nominated, because what we are trying to do is raise awareness of it to maybe attract sponsorship or maybe attract companies that might be, because it is an ideal. I mean, we have also been shortlisted for the Irish Sponsorship Awards, but we're not actually sponsored by anybody externally. Yeah, it was for the partnership model.
But I presume people are taking note of this and could see that this working in people coming from different backgrounds or from different problems. You know, you talked about co-problems, right? But I mean, at this point, domestic violence has to be a factor, right? Could it be broadened out more generally? Because some of the stuff that you're doing could be really valuable to lots of different people.
Well, the main issues that we're working with as well as domestic violence are mental health and addiction. And in terms of, you were talking about the impact, the feedback we've had around the impact it's had on people's mental health, even from preventing suicides. You know, we've had a number of clients who have said quite openly they would not be here if it was not for this program. So I think when you've got impact like that, a lot of agencies are standing up and looking at it and saying, yeah, actually this framework, this way of working is something that could be applied to addiction clients, to homeless clients, to mental health clients. You know, it is that kind of all-encompassing, putting together a support network piece that is probably missing from a lot of the other projects. Yeah. And it's that interagency piece. That's what all the agencies are saying. They still stay in their lane and do their own bit. But what we've done is tried to bring the lanes closer together so there's no gaps now between.
I just, Jessica, the idea that, you know, people come out of this programme in such a better position that, you know, that they have confidence that maybe even they couldn't be exploited again into the future or whatever it might be. I know every case is different, but it sounds fantastic that people are coming out so well equipped to, you know, with more confidence and in themselves and seeing opportunities and going for them.
Yeah, so
like 20%
really,
continuing in education. I mean, that's massive. I think it is anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you might have set as a key performance indicator, but 20% is brilliant. Because other people progress in different ways as well, not just education.
Exactly. The impact across their mental health and well-being in general is just, it's massive. 100% of our clients are reporting an increase in positive sports, an increase in their social network, just their general well-being. They're feeling able to do things. They're feeling able to engage with their addictions counselor or mental health counselor when before they would just isolate and not actually engage with these additional supports.
Even just not feeling isolated. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have felt like that for 20 years. Mm-hmm. To all of a sudden, there's people that care. And trying to help you progress in life. And obviously Marie mentioned it, Jessica, you know, it's great that it gets recognition, but it's actually really extra great that it raises awareness, and that's an important job that we're doing all the time. Marie, this would be obviously an offering once people have engaged with domestic violence services to begin with. So when I was going to ask about referral, but presumably it's part of when people come in to you.
Well, that's the way it currently stands at the moment, because it would have been set up as a small project and it would have been linked directly into Donegal Domestic Violence Services. But as I said, you know, I think For Empowerment is getting to the point now where, you know, we are going out. We've always gone out anyway to other agencies like the HSE, Adult Services, and also to SLU within Child Protection and Fostering Services, that we are opening it up that people who, and there is a huge population that have experienced domestic violence who've not actually come through our service. But I think down the line, if it does become its own entity, it will be able to take in referrals around specifically for mental health, specifically for addiction. And we are working closer and closer now with the Northwest Regional Drugs Task Force. So there's a lot of overlap now, not overlap, but joined up thinking and collaborative
there's
work.
It's not siloed, everyone's working together.
I
didn't sort of ask specifically about the impact on children and what you've seen there, because, you know, often, you know, children are there and, you know, they're sponges and God knows what they've witnessed or how they've been treated or what have you. I mean, I don't know if it's you or Maria or Jessica. Like, what are you seeing with the kids, Jessica, coming through? I know it's focused on mom or the guardian, but there are co-classes as well and stuff.
There are. So we've actually just started working on our children's program. So we're doing a lot of social emotional learning with them. And we're working on kind of identifying all of those emotions, putting them into a safe place so that they can start to process the trauma, teaching them how to play, teaching parents how to play with their children, and giving them that space to do so where it's safe. So we are seeing a massive impact on our moms and our kids, and we hope to continue that, and we're going to start growing that as we speak.
Is there I mean, every situation is different, but, you know, children from homes where domestic violence was present, is it important? Is there something that needs to be gotten in there to help them deal with the trauma, Marie, or, you know, try and help them deal with it that doesn't go on to affect maybe their relationships into the future?
I think there's a number of different factors, because one of the things, as Jessica mentioned there, I mean, there is a high percentage of children coming through our service where either they have an autism diagnosis or they are displaying behaviours that could be attributed to trauma but are similar to autism behaviours, you know. So first of all, for those children, trying just to engage and trying to get them to a point where you can have conversations about things has been a challenge. And I suppose this work almost came about by accident, because we were doing work with the women and we're almost just putting babysitters in place for the children. That wasn't really working. And then at that point, we decided, well, why don't we actually work with the children in a more meaningful way?
But also, I imagine there's an opportunity whereby, you know, there will have been a case, I'm sure, where a child can go on to get a proper diagnosis or proper supports in a different area that wouldn't have happened potentially if it wasn't for this program as well.
Well, yeah, because that is Jessica's background, working with, you know, well, you can say your background.
I'm a behavioural psychologist, so I work with children with additional needs. And I also work on kind of all of the behavioural elements. So we're also looking at kind of some of the cultural impacts. So helping mums kind of understand that it's okay to say if there's something going on with your child and that you're not going to be assumed a bad parent because your child is having some behavioral issues. So really working on kind of all of those different aspects and helping the parents feel empowered enough to say, like, hey, I need help with this, and not being judged on it. Because a lot of times what we would see is that their partner would then place the blame for the child's disabilities and things on the mother.
This is what concerned me about, and you kind of have to have these conversations, but it was being put out there, although the caveat was there, don't blame yourself, but about sort of alcohol consumption in pregnancy or alcohol consumption in the lead up to conception. And I said it at that time in the interview, there's a house somewhere where someone's going to get blamed for that. You know, now I understand we have to have that conversation as well, but there's just someone going to latch onto that and use that as another, you know, thing to abuse someone over.
Yeah, and we have that, and we have that as well. You've got new cultures coming in where maybe autism diagnoses aren't as prevalent, you know, so it's a new thing. And, you know, yes, the blame comes straight back. You're responsible for this. It's because you left me. That's why this child is now not speaking or is not. And yes, there is an element of trauma there, but it's supporting parents to realise there's a journey beyond this. You know, the option is not just going back and everything will be fine. There are other options. and we can support and, you know, link you in with other parents who are experiencing the same thing. Mm. And I think that peer support is useful, you know, and that's where a lot of, if you've got a child with a particular need, it is a lot more beneficial, I think, to talk to another parent who has a child with that need, you know, like it's, it just reduces that
isolation.
Because
that's another space where you can be isolated, separate to. We got a text in from a listener saying, I wanted to share with Highland this amazing award that Jessica and the Gloria House staff received in London last week. The service, support and guidance received by women and children at Gloria House are life-changing for mothers and children. I would have not got through the last 11 months without them. I felt it was important to let Highland know, maybe talk with Jessica on air. Thanks for your time. Well, we have a direct line into Marie Hainsworth, so I'm saying if there's any news at all, should we drag her in here for a combo? So, but listen, I'm delighted that it sounds like you're in a much better place in your life, and it's down to these people in front of me, which is great. Now, either Maria or Jessica, is there anything that you that I haven't touched on that you think is important to mention? Because this is your project, right? These are your this is your recognition, and I just want to make sure I touch on everything.
No, just to remember the name For Empowerment, because I think we are going to be promoting it and getting it out there a lot more. And we're certainly interested in talking to anybody that might be interested in working collaboratively with us. You know, we're already involved with a number of different agencies. I think as time goes on, it has the potential to do a lot more and reach out a bit further. So, yeah, just bear us in mind. And if anybody wants to sponsor us, you know, well, you know where I am. That direct line could work well for us,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, you know what? There are people that have extra resources and they listen to us from all over the place. If I was in a position, what an amazing thing to be able to support, you know, be it publicly or not publicly, to help mothers and their children to start, not start again, but you know what I mean, to have a life, to have hope, to continue moving forward. Okay, Jessica, anything you want to say?
Nope, I'm all set, okay. Thank you.
Are you going to leave your mobile? Listen, continue to do the fantastic work that you do all of the time, and we kind of bring yous in and get a sample every now and again, but yous are, you know, at the coalface doing this all of the time, making amazing differences to people's lives and helping them just when they need that help the most. If anyone listening to this, Marie, finds themselves in a domestic, in an abusive or violent domestic relationship, it's always best to reach out, isn't it? How might they do so?
Well, there's a number of options now. I mean, we are trying to build up our social media presence. So there is a Facebook page. You can message through that. There is a helpline number, the 1800.
I'll get that.
Yeah,
I'll get that. Yeah.
And then there's also a mobile number that people can text or WhatsApp onto, and I'll leave you those as well. So anyway, at all. Yeah.
So we're going to take a break. I'll come back with those. I have a call, text, WhatsApp number here, but I just want to double check it with you, and we'll get that 1-800 number as well, because maybe it's the best call you might ever make today. Jessica Gallagher, Director of For Empowerment Programme, Dr. Marie Hainsworth, CEO of the Donegal Domestic Violence Service. Both of you, thanks so much indeed. Now, something very exciting coming up at the start of this month, October 3rd to the 5th, 2025, in Glenties, County Donegal. It's the Bryanfield Trust presenting a weekend of events celebrating the work of one of Ireland's greatest writers and marking the latest development phase of the Brian Friel Centre. I'm very pleased to welcome onto the programme Mary Friel Bateman, Brian Friel's daughter, and Dennis Conway, actor and board member of the Brian Friel Trust. Both of you, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Good morning, Greg.
Mary, how does it feel, I suppose, as someone involved in this, but also the daughter of the great Brian Friel? It's it must be a very enjoyable experience for it, or is for you, or is it?
It absolutely is.
Thank God.
today is Brian's 10th anniversary, and I'm thinking back to 10 years ago. I was in Greencastle when he passed, and the world in a way has shifted in the last, people say to me, how does it feel 10 years? But the world has shifted to such a degree in the last 10 years. I think this is very special to mark this, the 10th anniversary in this way in Glenties at the Laurels. I think it brings us back to a place that held a very special place, as Anne, his widow, would say, a very special place in Brian's heart. It's a cottage that his aunts, the McLoone sisters, the Mundy sisters, as they are in Dancing at Lunasa, they lived there, and where he spent many summers, many very happy summers, among his mother, with his mother and with the aunts. So this is it's a very special way to mark the 10th anniversary and also to launch the opening in such a special way and among very wonderful guests. And
we're very lucky, actually, in our region, in our county, to host this, because this is an event could be hosted anywhere. Think it's very special, actually. And true to the man as well, of course, but it's very special, I think, that beautiful Glenties can host this. Dennis, when you're putting something together like this, and I'm looking through some of the events that are taking place, and when you've got such a life's work and such an amount of material to work with, where does one start?
As a member of the board, I'm on the board because I'm an actor, so I would know a lot of actors. And as you know from that list of actors we have reading, we have Stephen Ray, Adrian Dunbar, Sinead Cusack, Sarah Cusack, Kieran O'Reilly, Ingrid Craigie, directed by Conall Morrison. Conall is actually Anne's nephew. Is that correct, Mary?
So
there's a family member involved as well. When you're getting people of that caliber, basically I rang them and said, you know, would you be interested? And they went out of their way. Like, some of them are filming. Three of them are flying from London. Hopefully they'll land with the weather the way it is. So they've gone out of their way to be part of it. They're delighted to be part of it. And I can understand why. A lot of them would have started their careers in a Brian Friel play. And they would have a huge amount of... They would have known Brian quite well, a lot of them, I'd imagine, Mary.
They would.
And obviously the Cusack, Sinead and Surika are also related to the Friels. So it's very important for them to be there, and they're delighted to be there as well. So, yeah, so it was just a matter of ringing around and trying to make it work and seeing if we could get flights to work and pickups and all. You can imagine the palaver, but anyway.
I can. And I think it's a testimony to, you know, the influence Brian Friel had and continues to have as well. 10 years on after his passing, it would be easy, unless you were very moved to come, to make an excuse not to. So it's a great testament to him, I think. And a lot of it's very accessible. There's a mixture of booking, non-booking. There are some paid events, but generally speaking, Dennis, it's very accessible for people.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we really want to do here is to involve the local community. Mm. The centre is for the local community. Brian came to Glenties as a boy, and he came to, I have to say, the initiator of all this was a year after Brian died. So in 2016, Joe Mulholland, who ran the McGill Summer School, started this off as an idea and brought the rest of us on board. But Brian would have come to the McGill Summer School practically every year throughout, you know, for 20, 30 years. And he loved Glenties, and he's buried in Glenties. So it's really important. He loved the people of Glenties. And it's really important that this is accessible for everyone. It's not just for the, you know, the VIPs or whatever. And there will be VIPs there, obviously. But it's for the local people to make it part of their community and to use the centre when it's up and running for local plays, for local gatherings and whatever. There's lots of plans.
Yeah, Mary, the official unveiling of the restored Laurels Cottage is significant on many levels. Obviously, the 10th anniversary, obviously its importance in writings, but, you know, it is also a physical legacy as well. Like, I don't know, you talk me through, but as I say, there are layers of significance to this.
Absolutely, there are. And it has to be said, Brian at times thought, would he buy the cottage? And then he did think, to what end, to what purpose? And he would discuss it with us and wonder what would become of it. And I think it is wonderful. It's a wonderful way of honouring, as he said, the five brave Glenties women, his aunts. And to as Dennis says, also it's going to be of great benefit, I feel, and I know that he would feel, to the town of Glenties. I think it's very important that it is in Glenties, that's where we, as you say, we could have this event, we could have the weekend of events in Dublin or anywhere. But it would be a case, that we would love it to be the case that Glenties people, that the school would use it, that people would come and visit it and use it, and the Brian Free Centre in time when we have it up and running.
Yeah, because that will draw obviously from the local community, but such is Mr. Friel's reach and popularity, people will be drawn nationally and internationally to Glenties, to this hub as well. There's just no doubt about that.
Yeah, and there has been a delay. We started this, again, as Dennis said, 9 years ago, Moya had already bought the house, and Joe really ran with the whole plan of setting up some kind of Brian Friel centre. We didn't really know at that point, but I do think that the delay, the time delay that between COVID and just things not working out, I think the time lapse has worked to our advantage, because we've given it a lot more thought in what we want, and we could have extended the cottage, but that really isn't what it's about. The cottage should really stand alone as a cottage, and honouring the family, the McLuhan family and the sisters. And yes, it should reflect the life of dance that went on in Dancing at Lunasa. And Dermot Gavin has done a wonderful, it's just a very special garden setting, incorporating all the various aspects. So the laurels, kind of developing the laurels, but also making it just a very special place altogether that's well worth a visit. And then the other end of town will have the Brian Friel Centre. So it will bring people through the town.
Yeah.
And with different ways of honouring and the work.
Yeah.
And serving the people of Glenties, we hope.
Of course. And I just don't feel that you see it as often as you might, you know, proudly celebrating. Obviously, Brian Friel brought so much to the county, to the region, to Glenties, but also the inspiration he received from the people of Glenties, the landscape, etc. You know, we don't always get it right, I think, in sort of, you know, putting in place lasting memories or what have. Do you get where I'm coming from, Dennis? It's just really, really reflective to see that this was a two-way relationship, and it's reflected there, and it remembers Brian, but it also gives something back, gives a great deal back.
Well, that's the intention, certainly. The laurels is only the first phase. We're opening the laurels. We're calling this a soft opening. There will be a hard opening.
I'll tell you, if this is a soft opening, I can't wait to see the hard opening.
Exactly. Yeah.
Will it helicopter pads, red carpets? I don't know what we'd.
So I know it's wonderful because you know that the courthouse is going to be the main centre, really, and as Mary says, we'll keep the laurels as an homage to Dancing at Lunasa and the ants and all the rest of it. So there's a lot of money to be raised yet for the courthouse. So if you've got wealthy listeners there now listening in from Donegal, throw some money into it, lads. So we've done a lot of work at the courthouse, but we have to transform it into that centre.
Now, should we direct people to the programme of events elsewhere, or Mary or Dennis, do you want to pick something out that you're particularly looking forward to, even personally? It's not necessarily to promote it, but even personally over the weekend. I'll start with you, Mary, if that's okay.
Yeah, sorry, I look like I'm itching to come in. The Friday night is fairly booked. I mean, we started, I remember at meetings, we thought 150 people, let's aim for 150. I think we've passed the 400 mark at this stage, Dennis, am I right?
And
sorry, just to pick up there, it very much feels, I will come back to the highlight, it very much feels that we're among friends and travelling today and coming by the laurels. But as Dennis said, Brian worked with so many people, and he encouraged so many actors, and he was very generous. Dennis knows, Dennis was one of the last people to see him. He was very generous with his time and with his support for any up-and-coming actors, writers, theatre people. He loved, that was his world. So it very much feels like this weekend is going to be among friends. Sorry, Greg, back to your point.
No, that's okay, Mary.
For me, one of the highlights is in Ballybeg House. There's a great exhibition honouring Brian, and it's on loan from the Irish Repertory Theatre in New York. I saw it over there. And they've been very generous in their support. It's the exhibition as it stands, with artifacts from the laurels that have been donated by cousins and family members that came, music that Brian's mother would have played, Delf from the house, linen from the house. So there are some very special artifacts in that that I think
you get to really step into the history there, don't you? Yes, Dennis, yes. A highlight for you, if you don't mind.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Faith Healer on Saturday night with Blood in the Alley Theatre Company, with Seamus O'Rourke playing Frank and Orla Fitzgerald playing Grace and Michael Patrick playing Teddy, directed by Jeff Kuhn. And one of the reasons I got to know Brian is that I had a company called Ouroboros Theatre Company, and Jeff directed a production of Brian's Making History, which we took from the battle site Kinsale in Cork all the way to Rome. And that's how I got to know Brian really well after that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Jeff is doing with Faith Healer.
Excellent. And also that it's over with all the organisation and planning and logistics. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Dennis, listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful weekend, and hopefully the weather doesn't interfere too much. It shouldn't. Take care. Mary Friel Bateman, lovely to speak to you as well, Mary. Thank you so much for your time.
Greg.
Have a lovely weekend.
Thanks for your time.
Bye. It's our pleasure. Bye-bye. Okay. That's the Brian Friel Centre, a special weekend of events. So, there's a whole host of people people coming in: Sinead Cusack, Adrian Dunbar, Stephen Rea, Dennis Conway, Neil Martin, Kieran O'Reilly, Ingrid Craigie, Kieran Hines, Saoirse Cusack. And that's all just tomorrow night. Okay, so if you're into that type of thing, that's like winning the blooming lotto, isn't it? Rehousing. Morning, Greg. In my village, Irish families have been forced to leave their homes to house non-Irish people. Give the Irish families the €600 advantage to help them, plus all the other benefits. Surely that would help. How were they forced out of their homes? Are you saying landlords felt that they could get more? Like, I know cases of people paying. Now, in fairness, they do have the €600 as well. €1,500 to rent in rural Donegal. €1,500 for an average house. They're paying. They get €600 from the state, and then pay the nine themselves. Nine's a lot in and of itself, but that is going to skew the market. No harm to anyone, by the way. I would love any help I could get. Greg, of course there are sustainable ways to raise cattle for human consumption that don't involve sending month-old bull calves on a boat to France and Africa. I'm sure there are, but at the end of the day, these cows wouldn't exist if we weren't to consume them. I eat meat, by the way. Give me a steak and a stone. I'm not precious like that. I was simply saying that there are some people that would be more acutely aware. I don't want to see a lamb and then a lamb chop, right? Give me the lamb chop. I don't want to see where it comes from. I don't even like chickens, whole chickens or turkey, do you know, because you can see the anatomy of the thing. Give me the slices of turkey or give me the chicken breast. I don't want to see the legs and where the head used to be. But that's just me, hey? It's only a bit of crack. Right, I'm going to take a break because we have the news headlines at 11. We have live music, do we, Caroline, before 12? We have the winner of Mary from Dunloe, Ellie Ward. She sang a song brilliantly as part of her interview with the legendary Daniel O'Donnell on the night of it, and since has recorded it. So we're going to hear that a little later on.